Welcome to CPA Spotlight, a look at the issues that impact CPAs, their clients, and their businesses from the Maryland Association of CPAs. Hello from the MACPA's Midwestern Bureau here in St. Louis. I'm Bill Sheridan. Welcome to the podcast. We have to talk about healthcare, folks. We just have to. Deadlines are creeping up. Employers don't seem to be even close to being ready to comply with this thing. And now, as a result, President Obama has delayed the employer-related provisions. It's not complete chaos on the healthcare front yet, but there sure seem to be more questions than answers floating around out there. So to try to make sense of some of this, I called Rick Brzezinski and Sandra Crower. Rick is president and owner of Richard J. Brzezinski & Associates, and Sandra is RJP's director of risk management services. Some quick background here. RJP & Associates is the MACPA's longstanding exclusive preferred provider for employee benefits. The benefits of our relationship with RJP include access for all MACPA members and their clients to an array of valuable information and resources regarding healthcare and human resources. This time around, obviously, I wanted to know more about healthcare. So I got on the phone with Sandra and Rick and asked them to make sense of all of this Obamacare confusion. Here's what they had to say. Well, first of all, refresh our memory a little bit here. Tell us what the employer mandate requires us to do.
Well, that really is a very good question, Bill, because we've heard so much about the employer mandate and the description being that employers are required to offer health coverage to their full-time employees, if they're a large employer, 50 or more employees. But really what that so-called employer mandate is, it's the employer shared responsibility assessment provision, where there's nothing in the law that requires an employer to offer health coverage to their full-time employees. However, the provisions, the two provisions of this mandate are that if the employer does not offer health coverage to its full-time employees, the employer would be subject to a penalty assessment of $2,000 a year for all of his full-time employees if one of those employees should go to the exchange, enroll in a health plan, and qualify for a tax credit or premium subsidy. So that's the first provision of the employer mandate. The second one being that if the employer does offer health coverage, then that health coverage has to meet certain standards, which are affordability, and the plan has to meet the minimum value standards, actuarial value of the plan. If the plan does not meet those standards, then the employer would be subject to a separate penalty of $3,000 per year for the employee that goes to the exchange, enrolls in a plan, and qualifies for a tax credit or premium subsidy.
And we've been hearing a lot lately about the delay implemented by President Obama in enforcing some of this stuff. First of all, tell me a little bit about that delay. What has changed in light of that delay? Where do employers stand right now?
Right. That is, the delay is in the employer shared responsibility payment provision that was supposed to take effect in 2014. Basically, that's the provision that was delayed. There are other provisions taking effect in 2014 that have not been delayed. So what has been delayed? The penalty enforcement for employers who do not offer coverage or offer coverage that doesn't meet the two standards. But along with that was the reporting of health coverage to the IRS by the employers, and that's the big one that you hear about, that the computer systems aren't up and running and that sort of thing. And I think it's tied in with that because the employer would have to report for each employee whether they're eligible for coverage, whether the employer offers coverage, what kind of coverage is offered, how much it costs to the employee, all sorts of information that could be tied to accountability, I think, for the employer as far as penalty assessment.
And of course, at least when I think of something like this, my natural inclination is when giving an extension of any kind, my first inclination is to take every single second that we've been granted to comply with that. Now, are there any risks to employers who kind of choose to do so, or should they kind of keep moving in that direction right now?
Well, Bill, I have to tell you, I think when we read that question, we thought that was a very noble thought for you to think that that a lot of folks are out there trying to comply as quickly as possible. I think in reality what we've realized is that there are so many provisions of this massive law and that you're trying to comply with, that just complying with the ones you have to at the time that you do it is picking up all of your time and energy, so you're not even thinking about proactively complying with something. Additionally, because as we've seen over the last several years, that a lot of the provisions as written have been changed. You know, new guidance, and so it's changing on a weekly basis. So if you try to comply with something based on what the statute says now, it could be different a month from now. So again, I think that would cause more folks to kind of wait and see until they absolutely had to make sure that what they're having to comply with is the most current guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Sandy, wouldn't you say that, I mean, there are certain specific things now, like as an example, the requirement, and I think this is something that could be said in layman's terms, that even though small employers have no responsibility, no shared responsibility to offer any type of coverage or pay a penalty, the government has said that we put this law in place and we are making it a requirement of employers to educate employees about provisions of the law. So even a small employer is required to, as an example, October 1, there is a requirement that a letter be sent to all his employees, whether they're on the medical plan or not, to notify them about the exchanges and what it means and how they can access exchanges. So again, what the government, how I view it, is the government has said, you know, there's parts of all this doesn't apply to you, but it doesn't matter. You, by mandate, by law, are required to educate employees about these various provisions, and that happens to be one that's coming up very shortly.
Are there others? Are there other things that employers need to be doing beyond just the scope of this delay that they need to be aware of?
Well, yes. There's one specific thing, and I think I can see where CPAs could partner with their clients on this, although there's a short window of time that this has to be dealt with. There's this, I call it the PCOR tax, which is a tax that is due on all size employers on a fully insured or self-funded plan. And that tax is paid by the health plan, so you have no concerns there. But if you have a high deductible plan or you have any type of what's called a health reimbursement account, you have to pay a separate tax on that. That tax is due by July 31st, and this is a great opportunity, I think, for CPAs to get to their clients, because we're finding a lot of people are not aware of that particular tax. That is not filed by the insurance company. That's not paid by the insurance company. It's not a very expensive tax, but it is a requirement to pay it, and it's a requirement to follow by July 31st.
Now, given all that, what does all this mean for CPAs? What do they need to be doing themselves? What do they need to be telling their clients?
Well, certainly any of the provisions under the law that have tax implications for an employer group or it would certainly be, you know, key for the CPAs to be able to communicate and assist their clients, such as this PCRI fee that Rick just talked about, and the little intricacies in those with this fee. For example, as he said, the insurer pays this fee, and it's reported on IRS form 720 excise tax. There's a new form out there now that specifically has a section for this PCORI or PCORI fee to be listed. So certainly CPAs need to be aware of the new forms to report on the reporting requirements required under this law, so on and so forth. One of the intricacies of this fee is that although it's paid by the insurer, that's the difference between a fully insured plan and a self-insured plan. Fully insured plan, the insurance carrier is going to be calculating and reporting that fee. But for a self-insured plan like the health reimbursement arrangement that the HRA that Rick discussed, it is the employer, the plan sponsor, who is the insurer. And so they may have a fully insured health plan, but an HRA, so it's being reported on both sides, and there's different reporting requirements.
And Sandy, I think most employers don't view it in their mind that way. They think, I've got a health plan. It has a $2,000, just as an example, it's got a $2,000 deductible. I'm funding either all or a portion of that deductible. What's the big deal? Well, as Sandy said, that portion that you're funding it under an IRS code, under a health reimbursement account. And so it's the understanding that piece of it. And I would vouch to tell you that we have 700 clients, and a lot of them have those plans. And we've been educating them about the following of that plan. Now, there's a technicality on this. This year, July 31st, the plans, and Sandy might go through the dates, there's only certain date plans where there's only 3 months where the plan ends under those 3 months that the fee is required. Do you want to go through that?
Right. For this July 31st, it would be health plans that ended any time after October 1st of 2012 through December 31st, 2012, that must be reported, calculated, reported by this July 31st. So any plan that is a January plan renewal, so ends December 31st of the prior year, that has a reporting this July 31st. November plan that ends October 31st, and so ended October 31st in 2012, reports this year.
So it covers 3 months, but that's something you have to pay attention to and make sure people are aware of it. I think that's a great opportunity for CPAs to partner with their clients and or prospects.
And that in the W-2 reporting of health coverage that's been in effect for a year, it's still only in effect for employers who issued more than 250 W-2s in the prior calendar year. So small employers still have the relief of that until we hear further. But it's important to know that it's based on number of W-2s issued, not number of employees.
And I think the other thing that you could argue, because you've asked the question, what things should CPAs be telling their clients? Now, I could say that obviously this is something we do, but I can see CPAs doing this as well, because they're always talking to their clients about cost and financial projections. And that is the new rating structure for small employers. Because, we represent a lot of CPA firms, and they handle a lot of small clients. So effective in next year's renewal, if your plan isn't going to be grandfathered, and most of them are not, in a grandfathered status, we have a new rating structure that permeates the whole country. And so that rating structure is going to change what their bills look like, how their rates are designed. So as an example, right now, most employers are very used to a composite rate. So what that means is in the beginning of the year, plan year, the insurance company comes up with an average age of your group, and it comes up for one rate for per individual. So it doesn't matter what your age is, it's considered an average age for everyone. That changes on your renewal beginning in 2014. Everyone, every employee and dependent is rated on his or her own age. So if you had 40 employees and they had 40 different ages, you had 40 different rates. And unlike a composite rate for the family as well, so if I bought dependent coverage for my, you've heard the category of parent children, which would be a separate rate for everyone no matter what their ages are, that's going to change so that each dependent is rated on their own age. Each child is rated on his or her own age, up to two children, and then it goes to one total rate based on a formula. It can be based on smoker, non-smoker rates. So just the information that you're going to have to provide to your insurance brokers now to get a rate, you're going to have to give dates of birth on all your kids, your wife, your spouse. I mean, these are practical things, but it's certainly going to change the cost of health care. So as an example, how it's going to change, I can only project. I mean, you're going to see the younger person and it's certainly a different rate than an older person. And the other thing that we're doing, this is also national, but and not to complicate this, but in Maryland we have a structure that if you were to go to the market and get a rate, and let's say the average age of your group was a very young age group and it was 22 years of age, and compare that to another group across the street that had it had all 64-year-olds in it. Maryland says that the rate between the older age group and the youngest age group cannot be more than a 5-to-1 ratio. So in other words, if the single rate for that 22-year-old group was $100, the rate for the 64-year-old group can't be more than $500. Well, that changes to 3-to-1. So what that means, in essence, is that you're going to see for the younger people, you're going to see the rates going up, and for the older people, they're still going to go up because they're going to be based on their own age, but they may go up less than what they normally may have gone up. So you're going to see some cost shifting there, and that's going to be interesting to see. And you know, again, whose responsibility is it? And I don't think it's a matter of responsibility, because obviously we see that as a broker's responsibility. But still, I don't believe it's being communicated well in the marketplace. It gives the CPA firm another opportunity to partner with their clients and say, do you realize this is coming down the road and what this is going to look like in 2014?
And we've talked a lot about a number of these provisions already, but are there others that we need to know about right now with regard to this new health care law? What else should we be paying attention to, you know, immediately?
Yeah, and that's and first of all, Bill, I want to say that next month we're going to be participating in a town hall with MACPA, and so we'll be talking in great detail about the provisions and what you currently need to do. So, but kind of to recap that, one of the other things that are happening, and again, connection with the opening of the exchanges and open enrollment in October, and this I think is. Integral to CPAs advising clients under Section 125 cafeteria plans. Those are the pre-tax programs that employers can put into place for their employees to contribute on a pre-tax basis. And so those plans are based on a plan year. And unfortunately, part of the Section 125 regulations are that you have an open enrollment period where employees can make changes to their elections for that plan year. In addition to that, there are certain allowed changes mid-year or other than that annual enrollment period, status event changes, that are dictated under Section 125 regulations and other laws such as HIPAA, special enrollment rights. And unfortunately, the opening of the exchanges and the open enrollment period for the exchanges is not one of those allowed benefits. So one of the things that employers need to be aware of is that if they have a Section 125 plan, with the opening of the exchanges, they could not currently, if their plan was other than a calendar year plan, let's say it's a July plan, the enrollment in the exchanges would be a mid-year event. And it's not allowed under their Section 125, so they couldn't allow their employees to come off of their plan and enroll in an exchange plan or suddenly say, oh, my goodness, the law is requiring me under the individual mandate to have coverage, so employer, now I want to come on your health plan. They can't currently do that without amending their Section 125 plan. This is another opportunity, I think, to communicate to clients and some of the obligations, the requirements under this law that aren't very evident. One of the other things that are coming into play in 2014 is that a health plan cannot have an eligibility waiting period to enroll in that plan of more than 90 days. It's some of the common eligibility periods that we've been familiar with over the years is first of the month following 60 days, first of the month following 90 days. That first of the month following 90 days will no longer be allowed on health plans in 2014. So any employer with that waiting period eligibility will need to ensure that they change that by their plan renewal in 2014.
Now, where can our members get more information about all this?
Well, certainly we're available, and we've been you know, working with MACPA for, what, 25
years?
Yeah,
for a long time.
And know that we have some specific expertise as to, you know, that's different maybe, but at least compatible with the expertise for accountants. And so we certainly are available to partner with any of your members to help them educate their clients and whatever.
Yeah, we have a piece that as soon as something changes and we've seen it change through HHS or some whatever department has approved it, a memo sent out to our clients, and CPAs are welcome, and I think many of them know this, but maybe it needs to be reemphasized that they certainly are welcome to use us to help partner with their clients to provide information. We've always partnered with the MACPA to do that. There's no cost to that per se, and we're certainly willing to do that because we consider them a special group, and we look forward to doing that, and we enjoy working with them.
Well, Sandra, Rick, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That was Rick Brzezinski and Sandra Crower of Richard J. Brzezinski & Associates offering some insight into President Obama's new healthcare law. If you want to learn more, join us for a special healthcare town hall meeting on August 27th at the Doubletree Hotel in Columbia. The event will be held from 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. and will feature Rick, Sandra, and MACPA Executive Director Tom Hood. For details, visit macpa.org. And for more information about RJP & Associates and the services they provide, visit rjpassociates.com or call 1-800-618-2600. Thanks for listening. For details about these and other issues that impact CPAs and their clients, contact the Maryland Association of CPAs at 800-782-2036 or visit us on the web at macpa.org and cpasuccess.com.